The Columbia Network welcomes you to the Columbia Workshop. Tonight's production is called At the Sign of the Lark. It was written by Charles Norman and adapted for radio by Charles R. Jackson. And the workshop spokesman is the director of tonight's play, Earl McGill.
The Columbia Workshop has become known to listeners as radio's oldest experimental theater, a period of time set aside by CBS for publication over the air of new ideas and story materials. In many of our workshop plays, we have tried to make ambitious use of all the resources of the medium called radio. But tonight, we're doing a very simple thing. No spectacular production problems are involved, no provocative new writing. You see, in the next 30 minutes, nothing very much happens. Nevertheless, we hope you'll enjoy being around it while it is happening. Perhaps you, like myself, have had in the back of your mind the idea that someday you'd like to own a bookshop and dream out your declining years in the friendly shelter of its color-backed shelves. Perhaps then you'll like this easy-going, unpretentious story of just such a bookshop, the kind you'll find tucked away on many a peaceful side street in every town and village of America. Books and what they stand for are pretty important these days. In fact, America is one of the few countries in the world where you can still walk into your favorite bookshop and pick out any book and take it home and read it without being molested. Freedom to read is only one of the many freedoms we're all fighting to preserve, because freedom to read means freedom to think and freedom to learn. Democracy is the last sanctuary of this kind of freedom, and that's why we think it's important for the next half hour or so to take you into the quiet little bookshop called At the Sign of the Lark.
Another one.
Are you the proprietor of the Sign of the Lark?
I am. Gissing's the name.
Oh. You buy and sell books?
A little of both. Not much of either.
Well, I've got a few to sell here. Would you be interested, Mr. Gissing?
Let me look at them.
Well, here you are. One or two are rather rare. Oh, they're in good condition.
So is practically any book that was published yesterday. Listen, I specialize in old and rare books. First editions, out of print, curiosa. This sort of thing you've got, I'm sorry, but they're worth nothing.
Nothing?
Why don't you people ever bring me something I can sell?
Well, what, for instance?
Look, if you want to make me a happy man, and both of us rich, both of us, do you hear? Bring me, say, bring me Tamerlane by a Bostonian.
Tamerlane by a Bostonian?
Oh, don't look aghast. There is such a book, or was.
Naturally, I know the book. Know of it, that is.
Tamerlane. And not by a Philadelphian or a San Franciscan, but Tamerlane by a Bostonian.
The book you name, why, it's one of the rarest items in American literature.
Ooh.
It's worth a small fortune.
I'm well aware that I ask the impossible. But you see, in this business, we live in hopes. Well,
certainly you don't expect such a book as that to turn up.
Oh, true, I don't. But last week, a copy of The Scarlet Letter turned up at Tonkin's shop up the street. And only a month ago, Flums on 4th Avenue found a Leaves of Grass. First editions, both of them. Now, where did they come from? They came from somewhere.
Oh, excuse me, Mr. Gissing. I guess we have nothing to talk about. Good day, sir.
But I thought you wanted to talk about rare books.
I did. But not that rare. Tamerlane by a Bostonian. Indeed.
Oh, Mr. Gissing.
Who are you? Where'd you come from?
Just over there. I've been here quite a while.
Too many nooks and corners in the shop. Well, what is it, young man?
This copy of The Ghost Ship by Richard Middleton. How much is it?
Let me see. Oh, I don't know who marked this at $2.50. No wonder it's been here so long. Oh, I can let you have it for $1.25. Is that all right?
That's great, Mr. Gissing. Thanks a lot.
Oh, wait a minute, please.
Oh, yes, young lady.
Is that The Ghost Ship?
Yes, this young man is just buying it.
Oh, Well, I had my eye on that. I was just going to...
I'm afraid you're too late, miss.
You mean you wanted it?
Well, of course. Didn't you see me looking at it only a moment ago?
No, I didn't. But here, let me make you a present of it.
Oh, well, really, I couldn't think of it.
Well, but you wanted it.
I know, but... Oh, dear.
What kind of a conversation is this? Well, but. No, but. Is that the way young people talk nowadays?
Well, you see, Mr. Gissing...
What's your name?
Why do you ask?
My name's Colby, Stephen Colby.
I'm Alice Evans.
Do you come here often?
Well, yes.
I never laid eyes on her before.
So do I.
Or you either, young man. I've never seen either one of you.
Oh, well, that's because you never see anything but books, Mr. Gissing. People don't mean a thing to you.
They do to me. Don't they to you, Miss Evans?
Yes, a lot.
Perhaps we'll meet here again.
Perhaps. It's such a nice shop.
That's meant for me, I suppose.
I may be here a good deal the next couple of weeks. I mean, I'll be having more time then. My vacation starts Monday.
Well, aren't you going away at all?
I don't think so. This time.
You mean you'd spend your whole vacation in a bookstore?
I would in this one.
Ah, there, a customer. Time something broke up this silly talk.
Doesn't look like a customer to me.
Just somebody with something to sell.
Well, let's hope it's something good.
Mr. Gissing?
Yes.
Would you like to buy a couple of lithographs?
No, thanks.
Oh, but these are good lithographs.
I don't want them.
Let me show you one. You can have them very cheap.
I can't use them. I buy a fine print occasionally, but then only when I have a special customer. Never lithographs.
Here, see this Mona Lisa? Why, do you know what it's worth? It's worth $1 million.
The one in the Louvre, maybe. Now I'll tell you what you do. Go up the street to the framer's and sell your lithographs to him. He can frame them and sell them for $1 apiece, and then you'll both get something out of it.
But if he can sell them, why can't you?
I've just explained. I have one or two customers for fine prints, but not for cheap lithographs.
Do you mean to say that my lithographs are good only for Tom and Dick and what's his name, Harry?
It isn't necessary to put it that way. It's just...
I'm sorry to have bothered you, sir. Goodbye.
Oh, dear. For once, just once, why doesn't somebody bring me something of value? Something I can sell.
Anything in particular, Mr. Gissing?
Now, this spring, somebody came into Dorfus's shop with a perfect copy of a Vanity Fair. First edition, of course, with Thackeray's own illustrations. Several things have been turning up like that lately. It's rather mysterious. Mysterious, too, why they turn up in some other shop but my own.
I should think that'd be just the fun of such a business. The chance always of finding something like that.
Don't go getting ideas in your head, young man. Stephen, was that your name?
That's right, sir.
It's a romantic business only to people like you.
I'd love to work in a shop like yours, Mr. Gissing, and I'm sure Mr. Colby would, too.
Thanks, but you wouldn't make a nickel.
Tell me, Mr. Gissing, why is it called the Sign of the Lark?
Why, I guess I just like the name, that's all. Or if I ever did have a reason at the beginning, I've forgotten it. Now, look, you young people, I'm very tired and I'm not feeling too well.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, it's nothing serious. I'm just tired. So why don't you two children run along and come back some other time? I'm going to close early today and go home and take a nap.
Why, certainly, Mr. Gissing. May we come in tomorrow?
Any time in the afternoon. I'm not here tomorrow morning.
Will you be here too, Miss Evans?
Well, I may.
Well, how about going somewhere and having tea with me now?
Well, I might.
Great. Will you join us, Mr. Gissing?
Oh, no, thanks. I don't want to be held responsible for this bookshop romance any more than I already am.
Mr. Gissing.
Horace?
Yes?
Breakfast is ready, dear.
Coming, Laura.
I have a little surprise for you this morning, Horace.
A surprise? Laura Gissing, sugared cottage cheese, floating in cream.
Are you feeling better today, dear?
Oh, I'm feeling fine now. It's nice of you to prepare these special treats for me.
Not nice at all. I like to make things you like.
Ah, what could be nicer than that?
Enough flattery, Horace. Now, eat your breakfast.
Yesterday in the shop, Laura, someone asked me why I called it the Sign of the Lark.
And what did you tell them? ready for coffee, dear?
Oh, I told them, I don't know what. I didn't tell them the truth that I named the shop for you.
For me? Horace Gissing. Oh, this is news. And how did... What does it have to do with me?
You, Laura, are a lark. Oh. I've always thought of you that way. Perhaps because of your nose and that little bird-like mouth of yours.
Horace, after all these years.
Or perhaps because you brought a lark song into my life.
Oh, that's the nicest thing any man ever said to his wife.
I met such a nice young couple in the shop yesterday. I wonder if they'll be as happy as we've been.
Are they engaged?
No. Oh, that is, they weren't when I saw them.
Now, what can you mean by that?
And I hope he'll be a better provider than I've been.
Oh, how can you reproach yourself with that, dear?
I hope he'll get into some good business and stay there. And yet he says he'd like to work in an old bookstore. In mine, no less.
Are you thinking of taking him on, Horace?
Oh, how can I? The shop will scarcely support you and me. Oh, now why can't I make some really good find? Some rare item that would at least enable us to pay our bills and... leave us with a few $100 to spare. Oh, I don't want much. And if I could get a reasonable price for some good find, I'd share it with the person who brought it to me.
I know you would, dear. That's where you're so different from the other dealers.
And why they get along so much better than I, probably.
Ah, don't worry, Horace. You'll make that rare find yet. I feel sure you will.
I feel it too, Laura. You know, valuable items have been turning up lately in all the shops but mine. But my turn is coming. I told one man yesterday to go out and find me a copy of Tamerlane by a Bostonian. He snorted and walked out in disgust.
I should think he would. After all, it would have been a little more reasonable, Horace, if you'd asked for the moon.
Yes, I suppose so. Well, dear, I've got to be going. Thank you for the surprise. And for you. And for all that you mean to me. And
darling. But aren't you leaving early?
A little. This is my morning to look in on the other shops. I'd like to see what the others are doing.
Oh, I forgot. But don't walk about too much. Remember, Horace, you're not feeling well.
No, I'm better now, Laura. Goodbye, dear.
Goodbye.
Good morning, Dorfus.
Oh, it is you, Gissing. Come in, come in.
I can't. Very far.
These packing cases. Wait, I'll just push this one to one side. Here now. There's plenty of room.
How do you ever find anything, Dorfus? As long as I can remember, these packing cases have been here, all over the floor.
I'll unpack them someday and put everything away. Then all will be neat and orderly. Like in your establishment.
Oh, I only meant I should think for your own convenience.
We all have our own way of doing business, Gissing.
That's true. Well, have you found my book?
What book?
The third volume of the Minor Poets that I've been looking for. You saw me the first two volumes, remember?
Oh, yes, yes. The late 17th century, the third volume. Well, I'm sure it's in one of these cases somewhere. I'll find it for you.
When, Dorfus?
When it turns up. I can't do it sooner, can I? Come by in a few days.
You know how long you've been saying that.
Saying what?
It's nearly 4 years since I bought the first two volumes of that set, and you were going to locate the missing volume in a few days.
4 years? Is it possible? My. How time flies.
Mr. Gissing, how are you?
Not bad, Flum. Not too good.
Not good?
But not bad, either. By the way, remember that item I discovered in your shop last week?
Oh, yes. The one you said was a Mark Twain first.
Yes, and you didn't believe me.
I don't still, Gissing.
But it had the author's autograph written on the flyleaf in his own hand, Samuel L. Clements.
Oh, little writing don't hurt any.
Flum, you're joking. You mean you still don't know that Samuel Clemens and Mark Twain were one and the same?
How can a man be two different persons?
Oh, Flum, you ought to be in the grocery business. Well, look, Flum, maybe this will interest you. I wrote a letter to a man I know who collects Twain firsts, a man with money. I told him about the copy you have. He's coming in here to buy it. You still have it, don't you?
Here it is, right here.
Fine, fine. Oh, now, for heaven's sake, don't sell it to him for a dollar and a half, as you've got it marked now. It's a genuine Mark Twain first, I tell you, and you can make a little money on it. I have a mind to buy it myself and then give you the commission when I sell it for you.
Ah, Mr. Gissing. Just the man I want to see.
Good morning, Tonkin.
Look here, Gissing. I had a call last week for a first. In good condition. Of Hausmann's last poems.
I have one. You want to buy mine?
Now, wait a moment. The other day, I turned up this. You think this would do instead?
Instead of what? The Hausmann?
Sure. It's a genuine first. Original wrappers.
But what are you thinking of, Tonkin? This is Last Poems by Lawrence Hope.
Well, just between you and I, Gissing, what's the difference?
There's a lot of difference. There's a great deal of difference. Why, there's so much difference that... Tonkin, may I sit down?
Certainly. What's the trouble?
I don't know. I feel faint. I think I'm going to... Yes, I know it. I'm going to faint.
No, hold it. Gissing, hang on.
Call my wife. She'll phone Dr. Gould.
He's better already, Mrs. Gissing. But he'll just have to stay in bed a few days.
Is it his heart, Doctor?
Oh, a very slight attack. He must rest a while now.
What happened?
Horace, don't try to talk, dear. Just lie still.
It was in Tonkin's shop. I felt myself fading like a lamp that's been turned low.
Yes, we'll talk about it later, Gissing. You're all right now, and that's the main thing.
Laura, dear, will you go to the shop?
We'll keep the shop closed a few days, Horace. This is more important.
But the young couple's going to be there. The boy and girl.
What boy and girl, Horace?
Yeah, you tell them they can keep the shop open for me if they want to. Give them the keys. Show them a few things. They're all right. His name was Stevens, I think, and hers...
Yes?
Good afternoon. Is Mr. Gissing in?
Are you Mr. Stephen?
Colby. Stephen is my first name. And this is Miss Evans.
How do you do?
Oh, I'm so glad you've come. My husband asked me to wait for you.
Mr. Gissing?
Yes. He's ill. Won't be able to work in the shop for maybe several weeks.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
And he wanted to know if you'd be willing, if you'd care to keep the shop open for him.
Willing? Why, we'd love to. Could you, Alice?
I can, but what about you?
Why, my vacation begins Monday. That'll give me 2 whole weeks. Oh, this is great, Mrs. Gissing.
I'm sure it's great for us, Stephen.
But how does Mr. Gissing know? I mean, he doesn't know us at all. How can he trust people he doesn't know?
That's Mr. Gissing. That's the way he is. He's always right about such things.
I'm sure we're very flattered.
And we're very grateful. Now, let me show you a few of the things it's important for you to know, and then on Monday you can take over yourself. Now, here's the cash box from which Mr. Gissing pays out for the things he buys.
I see.
You keep this cash quite separate from the rest, mm-hmm. And over here is a list of special... They're very good, Horace. Such a nice young couple. You're always so right about people.
I hope they have enough cash on hand to buy things with. I don't want them to have to turn away people who must sell their books now and then.
Oh, it'll be all right, Horace. I've shown them everything, and they'll buy what they think necessary or help out those who need help just as you've done.
I hope so.
Then each night after the shop is closed, they said they'd come round here and show you a list of the things they've bought and the things they've sold. I assured them that they must use their own judgment entirely, that whatever they did would probably be just what you would have done.
Who's coming, Alice? Remember him?
Yes. Isn't that the poor man who tried to sell some lithographs last week?
Oh, Mr. Gissing felt so badly about turning him away. We've got to buy something this time.
Mm-hmm.
How do you do? Is Mr. Gissing here?
Mr. Gissing is away for a few weeks. Is there something we can do?
Well, I have a little book here. I wonder if you'd care to buy it.
Let me see.
I don't need much for it. 50 cents would do.
What do you think, Alice?
Gee, I don't know, Stephen. It's only a pamphlet, but it looks awfully old.
Oh, it is old. It came out of my father's library, who had it from his father. I do think it's worth 50 cents. I mean, 50 cents is all I'll be needing today.
For a pamphlet? Still. Okay, here's half a dollar.
Oh, thank you very much, both of you. Good day.
Good day.
I suppose you have to take a chance in this business. Anyway, it's an awfully nice color. Salmon pink.
Now sit down, both of you, and tell us all about your day at the store. I'll make you a cup of tea.
Oh, I'll bet they'd rather have a glass of sherry. How about it, Alice?
Oh, thank you, Mr. Gissing. That would be nice.
Here's the list of the few items we bought today, Mr. Gissing. Gee, I hope it's all right.
Oh, I'm sure it is, Stephen. I'm sure you know books as well as I do.
Well, just check it over anyway. I'm curious to know if there's anything good there.
Or if we've been foolish and bought the wrong things.
Stephen, you're joking, aren't you?
What? Oh, that item. Shouldn't I have bought it?
You mean you have this in the shop now?
I didn't know what it was, but the man only needed 50 cents, and it looked so old and rather interesting.
Interesting? Interesting? Is it still in the shop? You haven't sold it again.
Oh, it's in the shop, all right, in the back with the other person.
Horace, what are you doing?
Well, Mr. Gissing.
Did I do anything wrong?
Horace.
No, don't try to hold me back, Laura. We're going to the shop.
Horace, what about your heart? The doctor... Oh, Horace, you must rest.
Oh, how can I rest till I see it with my own eyes?
What's wrong, Mr. Gissing?
Horace, I'm going to phone Dr. Gould.
Then tell him if he must come. I'll meet him at the shop. I may need him there. The light, quick.
Horace, you must take this quietly.
Here it is, Mr. Gissing, on top of the pot.
Oh, yes. Let me sit down. Now I can be calm.
What is it, Mr. Gissing? What is it?
Tamerlane and Other Poems by a Bostonian.
Tamerlane?
The printer was Calvin F.S. Thomas. There should be 40 pages.
It hardly looks big enough for 40 pages.
Yeah, they're all here. And 3 pages of notes at the back, just as it should be.
What is Tamerlane?
This is the first book published by Edgar Allan Poe.
But what does that mean, then, by a Bostonian?
Oh, it was just Poe, the young genius, pandering to the Brahmins of Boston by announcing himself as one of them.
Gosh.
Is it worth a great deal?
The last time a perfect copy with the wrappers was sold, it brought around $20,000.
Oh, $20,000?
Oh, I couldn't keep all that money. It wouldn't be fair.
But
where did it come from? Who is peddling these rare books that have been turning up in the shops lately and selling them for so little?
This one came from the lithograph man. Do you remember him?
Yes, I remember. The one who spoke of Tom, Dick, and Harry.
He was in this afternoon, and Alice and I paid him 50 cents for this. Imagine.
We must find him. He must be found. I couldn't keep all that money. Stephen, watch for him. Watch for every person who comes into the shop.
Yes, sir.
We've got to find him and tell him the value of what he's sold to us. And now, I'm going back to bed.
Gissing, what are you doing here?
Ah, see, here's my doctor come to take me home. Don't worry, doctor. Who knows? Maybe I'll be able to pay that long-standing bill of yours.
We wish to inquire about this bound magazine.
The old Scribner's?
Yes. My friend here cannot believe that you intended to place it on sale for 10 cents. It is his idea that a mistake has been made.
No mistake at all. On that shelf there are 40 more.
At 10 cents?
That's right.
Extraordinary.
Shall we examine them?
Will it be all right?
Oh, perfectly all right. They're all for sale.
Edith Wharton.
Extraordinary.
Mark Twain.
Amazing.
Thomas Nelson Page.
Incredible.
Frances Hodgson Burnett.
William Dean Howells.
Joel Chandler Harris.
F. Hopkinson Smith.
I wouldn't have thought it possible.
Extraordinary.
We are grateful to you for allowing us the privilege of examining these magazines.
Oh, very grateful indeed.
And they are only 10 cents?
Yes, that's right.
Extraordinary. How do you do it? Well, we mustn't take up any more of your time.
We are very glad to have seen with our own eyes.
Perhaps we'll drop around again one day.
Stephen, look.
What? Where?
Look who's coming in. The lithograph man.
It is.
Now, don't scare him.
Scare him? He'll be delighted at the news.
Good afternoon. Could I interest you in a couple of books I have here?
You're just the man we've been waiting for.
I?
We have something very important to tell you.
What about?
That book you sold us last week.
What book?
Tamerlane by a Bostonian.
Well, you bought it.
But it's worth a lot of money.
What do you mean? I didn't steal
it. No, don't
go. Wait, this is good news if you'll only listen.
I don't know what you're talking about. I sold you a book and you paid for it. I don't want anything more to do with it.
Now listen, that book is worth a great deal of money, and Mr. Gissing wants you to have your share of it.
He wants me to have my share?
Yes, that's the kind of man he is.
You bought the book and it's yours. And yet you say it's worth a lot of money and you want to give me the money as though you hadn't bought it. Is that it?
No, but Mr. Gissing feels you should share in the profit when he sells it again. For a lot of money.
How much money?
15 or 20,000. It depends.
Isn't that wonderful?
No. I won't have anything to do with it.
But it's true. Don't you believe us?
Well, leave me out of it, can't you?
Well, what's the matter? Isn't the book yours?
Of course it is. At least it was.
Well, then why don't you want your share?
I don't want it. Not all of it. I wouldn't know what to do with all that money.
Not all of it, no. That wouldn't be fair either.
I said I wouldn't take it, didn't I?
Mr. Gissing needn't have done this, you know. You wouldn't have been any the wiser.
But he felt that whoever owned that book and brought it here to sell needs money as badly as he does. Don't you think it's nice of him?
I suppose so. I tell you what. I brought it. You bought it. It's Mr. Gissing's now. Let him sell it.
And then?
Well, then he can give me, let's see, say, $1,000? Yes, that's it, $1,000. I wouldn't know what to do with more. I'm not going to let it interfere with my life, all that money. I've sold lots of books lately, here and there, around the neighborhood. And my father left me thousands of them. Quarter here, 50 cents there. It's kept me alive.
Columbia Workshop has just brought you At the Sign of the Lark, a play about a bookshop written by Charles Norman and adapted for radio by Charles R. Jackson. The role of Mr. Gissing was played by John McGovern and that of Mrs. Gissing by Peggy Allenby. Others in the cast were Mitzi Gould, Wilfred Lytell, Guy Repp, Philip Clark, Ted Osborne, Walter Slezak, and James Monks. Music was conducted by Victor Bay and Earl McGill directed. Next week, the Columbia Workshop will present Man Without a Shadow by Werner Michael. Charles Vander will direct. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.